on a new product or company. Know enough that you yourself are sold on this new idea, this new startup, this new thing, and go make it known to others. For instance, I'll give you an example. If you go to Cardone Success on Facebook, you'll see me talking about things that will not happen to me for months. Whether it's a TV show, a radio show, a new book, an idea, you'll see me have an idea, post it, show it, share it, talk about it, and start putting one ember in the fire. Maybe I add a piece later on. Maybe I add another piece. All right. When are you going to get started? What's it going to be like when you get started? How do you start over with new clients? This is a problem for most salespeople. Don't let it be one for you. Losing business to others. Look, it's demoralizing to lose a deal to a competitor. You have two choices of action when this happens. You can blame another person or someone else and be a victim, or you can learn from it and win the next round, okay? But in business, you're going to lose deals. You're going to lose deals to other people. You're going to lose fights. This isn't like a professional, you know, athletic career, boxing career, football career. You know, the career in sales can last 40 years. Unlike a football player that's going to last maybe, what, 6-8 years? See, if you choose the first plan of action, blaming someone else or some condition, you become a victim. The reason for this is when you blame another, even if it's true, oh, he undercut me, he underpriced me, he stole the business, he promised him something I can't promise, he offered an incentive that we can't do, they offered financing and we don't. All those are blaming indicators. You're making yourself a victim. And you're making them right. You're actually making them superior. So when you're trying to make them wrong, oh, they offered, you know, a lower price. Like you're just flowing power to them to say they can operate at a lower cost than you can. The reason for this is that you're not taking full responsibility. Look, to be an excellent, world-renowned salesperson, you have to increase your responsibility level. That means you can never, ever give somebody else responsibility for why that thing didn't get handled. You're allowing the consideration of you being a victim to creep into your thinking that something or someone other than yourself is in control of every transaction. You are in control of every transaction. This idea, even if you're right, oh, they rear-ended me or they cheated me, or even though that might be true, you got run into from the back, or they conspired to cheat you, all this turns over control to others. This leaves too much room for failure, opens the door to your competitor so they can keep swooping in, keep winning deals, and keep you down. Instead, look, I know guys in the marketplace. I know a guy once told me, hey, Grant, most of my advertising is designed to put our competition on their heels. It is not to get our customer at our front door. Most of our advertising is done for the sole sake to back our competition off, people they compete with, sell against, have similar products to. Their first goal was not to spend money to get people to their front door, but to put their competition on their heels. Instead, look, when you lose a deal to a competitor, try choosing path number two. Path number two is, what happened? What did I do to not get that business? What did I not say about my product? What did I not make clear? What could I have done different? How can I make my product or my value or my brand superior without lowering my price? Look, it might be a slight tweak of your presentation. It might be some piece of information you didn't share. A great tool to use in getting known what you did wrong is to have someone other than yourself, preferably a manager, find out by making a phone call or a visit. Hey, what happened? Why didn't we get this business? Oh, they gave me a lower price. Other than price, why didn't they get it? But many times the client will tell another person, a third party, more than they'll tell you. This is a non-threatening call, which is not pushing for sale. It's done more along the lines of a quality control procedure to find out how the customer's experience was, how the salesperson did in representing the company. In this case, it's you, and what you could do different. This is very effective. It can garner valuable information that you can learn from and put into use if you're not being a victim, because victims can never learn anything. Let me tell you, the only thing that ever happens to a victim is bad stuff over and over and over again. You know, the victim? The victim says, I'm not at fault. Somebody else was. And this is going to happen to me again. And oh, by the way, you can always ask some victim, is this the first time this happened to you? And they'll be like, oh no, happens to me all the time. Like you'd think they're winning lottery tickets. Oh no, man. Oh no, bad stuff happens to me all the time. Oh. See, there's just no upside to being a victim. Now this call, a third party call, hey, what did he do? What could he have done different? Why didn't you buy from us? You know, if the price was the same, if we'd have done this, what could we have done to make a difference? Any of that. This could put you at cost, put your company more at, you know, control and actually putting you in a position to do something about it instead of crying in your spilt milk like a little itch bay. Lack of consistency. Look, your lack of consistency always, always, always boils down to a lack of real discipline. We talked about discipline earlier. Discipline is not a concept for bodybuilders. Discipline is not something confined to military people and bodybuilders and, you know, people that are just, oh yes, sir. Okay. Discipline is part and parcel of our everyday lives. It means you have exerted control over random elements and made something of them. You can see a disciplined person when you walk in a room. Okay. When chaos strikes out, you can see the guy that's disciplined. He's going to exert control. You need to discipline an unruly garden in order to turn a thing of beauty out of something that's not. Okay. So there's got to be some discipline. There's got to be somebody going there and taking the weeds out. Same thing for a sales organization. Some managers got to go in there and de-weed the negativity, have discipline to push the troops. Your process of making phone calls, reaching out to new people, handling a customer correctly from the beginning through the follow-up. These are all things that merely must become part of your existence. When you learn your craft, you train and grow stronger. How you get dressed every morning is a discipline. What time you wake up every morning is a discipline. How often you're working out is a discipline. How often you're reading books is a discipline. Your fears are like weeds in a garden which grow out of control only, I believe, only when you lack discipline to contain them. There are a finite number of things that you must do every day. It's not infinite. It's not forever. It's a finite number, only a handful of things you have to do every day to contain your environment and make sure you're in control of. There are a finite number of things that you have to do every day, and when you do them, an incredible blooming will occur for your success, your sales, and your income. If you don't do them, you will become overwhelmed by the weeds, decay, and unruliness, and you will become scared to even try because of a sense of no control. Take control each day and do what's needed. You know what that list is. If you go back to our schedule and look at our schedule, that's why important that is. If you want to check out our day runner, our day timer, or whatever you call your way, your battle plan, your daily battle plan, we're creating a Grant Cardone goal sheet, schedule, battle plan, quote of the day. So each day you can lay out either on your computer or with a pen what discipline looks like to you in that day. Take control of each day. Do what's needed. Create a checklist for yourself. Make sure you reach and exceed each target, or at least attempt to. And then better yourself the next day. Calls to 25 people, done. Give my business card to 30 new people, done. Write 50 emails, done. Post 50 times, done. Close 3 new deals, done. See, mark it off. Show how you're winning. Treat these items as a game. Improve your score every day. Soon, the dreaded need for discipline will be replaced by fine-tuned habits that create wealth for you, your family, and your business. By the way, you might want to put on your calendar Cardone Zone, Tuesdays, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time as part of your schedule. Discipline. Listen to me every day at noon. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Tuesdays. And on Thursdays, Young Hustlers. Yeah. For the Young Hustlers. Thursday, 1 o'clock PM. You go to grantcardone.com/CardoneZone or grantcardone.com/Young Hustlers. Cold calling. Prospecting. Who is my customer? Who would buy my product? Who is a customer for my product? Who would buy my product? Can you imagine standing on a street corner? Who's my customer? Hey, this is a question all salespeople ponder when looking for prospects and starting a point for their business. How do I expand it? How do I sell something? Who's my customer? Who got some money for us? See, you will innately have this answer the moment you fully understand and are sold on your product yourself. You see, once you're sold on your product completely, you'll know all the problems that your product solves. Or you should. Then you're armed with all this information that you need to talk to anyone about the product or service you're selling. Who is my customer? This is the question you have to answer. You'll know immediately who has the problems that your product or service solves. Who are these people? Where are these people? How can I get in front of them? How can I talk to them? Where are they at online? How do I cold call them? How do I prospect them? How do I get myself known to them? Okay. How do I cold call, pick up the phone and call somebody? How do you do this? Hey, you don't know me, but I want to talk to you and I want to sell you something. Could be. Hey, that'd be better than no call. Step one, leave your fear, your reservation, or inhibition at home. Okay? You gonna make a call? Leave it. Just say, hey, fear, reservation, inhibition, take a moment. Step two, you need to look and sound professional. Step three, map out several potential clients based on who needs your product or service. Step four, go visit them or call them. That's the only way. Okay? Email doesn't count. Post on Facebook doesn't count. A LinkedIn post doesn't count. Call them, talk to them, or go see them. Be confident when you arrive. The fact that I'm picking up a telephone and calling somebody doesn't mean I'm not arriving. I need to be as positive on the phone as I would be if I was walking in the front door. Look, I got some guys that work with me. They're real road warriors. I mean, these guys that work in my organization, they've cold called every city in the United States. Walk in, cold call on a millionaire, midday, without an appointment, get past the gatekeeper, grab the guy's hand, apologize for taking time. Thank you for seeing me. I know I'm going to spend 4 minutes with you. Don't want to waste it. You give me 4 minutes, I'm going to share some information with you that I promise you'll change your month. Get out of here. I'm not interested. I don't have time for this. Who are you to walk in here? See, they know how to handle all that. Stone cold killers. Walk in anybody. Believe in their product. They believe in their service. They believe in themselves enough to walk in cold. Their complete belief in the fact that our product can improve the lives of their customers, our customers, and give them and their people confidence, improve the lives of the people that we're calling on. Their complete belief in that allows them to do what most people won't do. Pick up the phone and call somebody cold, or walk in and get through the front door calling somebody cold. They walk into companies, bypass salespeople, hundreds of people, and walk straight into the owner's office, straight to the decision maker, just by their manner in which they carry themselves. Man, learn how to do that. Nobody was born with that skill. They exude this air of, I belong here, I know where I'm going, I know where my customer is, I know what I'm here to say, I know exactly what I'm going to say when I walk in the door, and I know exactly what they're going to hit me with. Oh, man. I know some of you are experiencing fright just by my example. Believe in your product, believe in your service, negate your fear, or use it, better use it, by getting into action. Pure massive action will drown out fear and allow you to cold call. These people on the internet that said never cold call again. Oh yeah, it sounds like a dream, doesn't it? Look, if you won't cold call, you will not reach people that need your product. Commission only, no security. This is a big problem for salespeople, particularly in our culture today with so many people looking for the government to secure them, a safety net, protection, so much uncertainty in so many places. Look, growing up, we were all taught to study hard, get a good education, land a job with a major company, work 9 to 5, take 2 weeks a year off, retire with a little money in a company-subsidized 401k, and everything is going to be okay. Unemployment, Social Security will kick in. Now they're coming in with health care. Look, this was a safe thing to do when you were planning for your future 75 years ago. Parents, teachers, counselors preached this philosophy to countless students who were fighting to paint, dance, create video games, and think outside the box. Parents, teachers, and counselors have preached this philosophy. The media preaches this philosophy. The financial planners preach this philosophy. This idea of retirement one day. The guy selling 401ks, the guy selling mutual funds. Culture for 50 years has preached, buy a house, get a good job. While many of you were sitting there saying, man, I just want to paint. I want to dance. I want to do a movie. I want to create video games. I want to do something outside the box. And these people were literally sitting there crushing your dreams, telling you, oh no, don't do that. There's no safety in it. There's no security. Putting your future in the hands of a stock market, a real estate market, a CEO, a large bank, the rules of commerce is actually the most precarious thing you could do. Witness the events of just the most recent 2008 when the giants like Lehman Brothers, JP Morgan, Chase, Merrill Lynch doesn't exist anymore. Lehman doesn't exist anymore. They were stung by such massive losses. A couple of them disappeared so that a couple could stay. Thousands of locations closed. Companies that have been around for hundreds of years laid off millions of people, and some of those companies completely dissolved. What kind of security are you talking about? And you're talking about commission? All those people were on salaries. What we have to come to reality with is that, look, this safety, this environment, this safe and secure, you got unemployment that's being challenged today, whether it's even financially viable. Social Security, is it viable? Can it pay out in the next 10 or 15 or 20 years? Will Medicare even be here? There is no such thing as security or a safe job. Industries, entire industries are disappearing. Remember the telephone BlackBerry, if any of you can remember that far back. It was only 5 years ago. They owned the market. They're an $8 stock now. I think they were 800 at one time. Safe job? You want a safe job with a salary? What does that mean? Look, the truth is, we're all innovators. Everyone's an innovator. We're all idea people. You've had ideas your whole life. Your whole life you've dreamed. You have creations. Even when you were a little kid, you had ideas and fantasies. Now, that doesn't mean you need to go work for yourself. It doesn't mean not everybody is meant to work for themselves. Find somebody that thinks entrepreneurial. Find somebody that's an idea person. Find somebody that's creative and wants to see creative ideas and willing to fund kind of a space where people can come and play and be creative. But if you're looking for security, if a commission, oh man, I don't want to be on a commission, or I don't want, you know, the bonus doesn't mean anything to me. Look, if your boss comes to you and offers you a bonus to hit this target, and you're like, I don't really value that, or I don't see that as part of my, you don't figure it, they're paying you $60,000 a year plus a bonus, but you don't really see the bonus, then you think commissions are not safe. Look, everything in life is a commission. So when you get cold feet, and you will, and when you start to worry about insecurity, and you will, when you start worrying about living on a commission, and you will, when you start worrying about how you're going to pay the bills, and you will, when you start worrying about how to get to the next level, and I promise you it will happen to you, it'll happen to you whether you're working for yourself or you go do your own startup. It's just going to be uglier when you go do your own deal. Would you rather depend on the board of directors, the CEO's social security system for your future survival, or would you rather depend on you getting out in front of customers, making your products known, making your value known? Who do you think is most vested in your standard of living, in your future? The presidents of the CEO or you? Look, a commission's not an insecure thing any more than Medicare, Social Security, any of these financial supposedly secure items that are going to take care of you in the future. Look, a commission, everything you do in life is a commission. Everything, every friend, your children, every smile that you get on your face is because of something you did. Your financial success is best trusted to one person who has the most direct control over that, and that person is you. That is your security. Long hours. Man, I can't work sales. The hours are too long. I got a family. This is a big concern. The long hours will kill me. Look, working long hours is an eye beholder. Frankly, I've said before, you have the same number of hours in the day as anyone. Rich men, poor men, all colors, races, religions, no matter where you live, what part of the world. Dude, it's what? How many hours is it? I don't know, 24 times 7? I forgot what this is. I used to know this. 14 is 168. 168 hours every week. Every language. Mandarin, people, Chinese, Indians, Americans, the English, the Australians. 168 hours, the way we measure time. Rich man, poor man, broke lady, rich lady, same amount of time. The question is whether you're working for your dreams or working for somebody else's. See, it's going to be a long day if there's no dream involved. If there's no way to get some freedom here, if you're not doing the things you love to do, it's going to be a long day. The reality is that even when you go home, you're still working for someone. You go home and you're working for your spouse now. You go home. I know people go home working for their kids now. Maybe you like to work out. So what are you doing when you're working out? Oh, you're working for your body, the body you want. Maybe you have a family and you're working for them. You're out, you know, you're grinding for the kids and the wife. Then you're working for them. They're the boss now, right? You got long hours. Somewhere in here, you got to find out why you're doing this for you. Maybe you have a family and you're working for them. You're getting dinner together, cleaning up, putting the kids to bed. Maybe you go home. Maybe you're smoking weed at night, man. You're working for the man. You know, the man that sells the kush. In that case, that'll be the government here in a little bit. Well, you're watching TV. You're working for CNBC. You're zoning out until you pass out and you start over again the next day. Look, if this is the case, you're working like a charm for the pot dealer or the government. That's who it'll be before long, because you're a perfect victim of a system and no longer in charge of your life. If I describe to you in the last example, hey, call my office and get some information on how you can get back out of this horrible trap. I know I've been in it. I was in the rat trap. I was in feeling like every day, these are long hours, man. Look, they're all long hours if you don't love what you're doing. I can recommend a book to you. Call me up. I'll tell you what it is. that will wake you up, make you more alive than you've been. The good news is that if you're working 24/7, whether you know it or not, heart's beating, lungs are working, you're working. So now what we got to do is figure out, how do I add some excitement to that so it's not long hours? So if you continue to maximize your time toward positive actions, then you're going to be working it correctly. And look, if you're just half awake, stoned, just clocking in, rambling through life. I know I'm talking from personal experience because I spent a number of years operating like this, or I'm sorry, roboting like this. Look, a half hour can seem like an eternity. I've had 15 minutes feel like it was the longest 15 minutes of my life. If you are truly alive, truly the captain of your own ship, then you're going to be in control of your dreams. Every day is going to be a dream. It's going to be like, okay, I'm going to go there and I'm going to make this thing my dream today. This isn't pie in the sky. This is real for people. I know people that operate like this. They're excited every day. Then you're working for you. No matter who you're working for you now. Doesn't matter who's writing you a check. You're working for you. You're working for your dreams. And then 14 hours will seem like nothing. It's all in your head. You know it's all in your head. You decide what you do and what you don't do. But you decide. You can literally change time if you allow yourself to wake up and smell the coffee of your dreams. What is my dream? What am I doing today? When I wake up just like you. Foggy, don't want to get out of bed, body hurts. Oh my God, what am I going to do today? I gotta get it going just like you. So hey, what are my dreams? Where am I going? What am I doing? Why am I doing this? What gets me excited? I have to do that every day to myself. A career in sales, this stigma of having long hours, man, it's got nothing to do with selling. Okay. I know guys in retail sales. Oh, I hate retail because it's long hours. I'm on my feet all day. I got to sit here and wait for traffic. You got the wrong attitude, man. Why would you wait on traffic? You work at Macy's. Why would you wait on traffic at Macy's? Why don't you break the mold and say, you know what? I have a customer base. I'm going to call them, contact them, go see them. I'm going to sell out of everything in this store. If you guys don't do that, they're in retail, you're going to get crushed. Nobody's coming to you in the future. In sales, you're working for yourself. You're in control of how much you make, how much you do, how many phone calls. There's literally no ceiling to your income, no limits except the limits you put on yourself. And don't tell me about the margins and the economy and the banks. Look, how many people can you get in front of? There's only 7 billion human beings. You think that working for yourself is working too long? Look, it's all work. You think working right now is too many hours? Hey, go become your own guy and you'll see what too many hours. You'll see what fear is every night. The traits of a great salesperson. Number one is willing to be told no. It was said, can't make the shot you never take. Who said that? The great one, Wayne Gretzky. Look, to be a great salesperson, you have to be willing to be told no and then allow people to tell you no more than once. Most salespeople never ask for the order one time, much less never repeat, do it anyway, failing to even ask for the no once, trying to avoid the very thing they are certain they will end up with. Number two, ask for the order regardless. Believe it or not, the great salespeople ask for the order regardless. No matter the wife's not there, the money's not there, they're not ready, they still ask for the sale. Believe it or not, the number one reason salespeople fail is because they just never ask. Can I get your signature here and here? I just told you, man, we're not doing anything. I know you told me that. Do you know how many people tell me they're not going to do it? Sign right here. Let's go ahead and do this and get it done. I don't even listen to people. I've heard that so many times, I don't even pay attention to it anymore. Most salespeople believe they ask for the order more than they do. You understand what I'm saying? Most people believe they're asking for the order and they're not. They're not even asking. God says, I'm not buying today. We're not going to do this. I didn't bring the wife. So they never ask. I just ask anyway. Here's what I want you to add. Ask for the order regardless of the situation. These people that don't are probably trying to avoid rejection, avoid getting a no, avoiding failure, and actually getting the rejection, getting the no, and getting the failure they're trying to avoid. Or maybe the discipline of asking, you just haven't developed it enough. Many people who are unable to ask are operating under some false belief or concept or idea that if I'm just nice, people will buy. No, wrong. People will not give you money just because you're nice. Only a very small percentage of the people will buy from you without you asking. Very small percentage. And anybody could have sold those people. Let's face it. If you're not going to ask and they're going to buy from you anyway, anybody would have sold them. If you're unwilling to ask for the order, you will only get the leftovers of those who are professionally trained, drilled, rehearsed, primed, statistics kept on to ask for the order. Great ones, ask for the order regardless. Number three, the great ones, listen selectively. Now, if you're one of those people who believes everything someone says to you, that everything someone says is true, and that what people say is what they'll do, look, you'll be a disaster selling. When a customer tells me they're on a budget, I listen selectively to that. You know why? Because I know everybody's on a budget. The whole world's on a budget. You know what else I know about the whole world that is on a budget? They will all violate their budget when they fall in love. Okay. Everybody violates a budget. That's what I know. Everybody's got one and everybody violates one. There is no exception to that rule. Everyone, when shown the right product, something they love, something to solve a problem, something that gives them more security and a higher sense of self-worth, will violate their budget. Listen selectively. People will say many things to you that are closer to meaningless than not. Most, in fact, what people say to you has no relevance at all. I can't afford it. We're on a budget. We aren't buying today. We're going to wait until we never buy at the first place. I have to talk to my wife. I'll see you later today. Look, most of that list has nothing to do with reality. If you're a gullible person, if you want to believe everybody, if you're just a nice guy, just believe everything your client tells you. Treat it like gospel. Sorry, you won't be cut out for selling. The great ones listen selectively. Number four, the great ones stay sold on their story, on their own story. If you happen to be one of those personality types that is easily sold on another story, unable to hold your position and conviction and belief about those things you're sold on, and then start buying their story, you will suck at selling your own products and you'll be great at getting sold on others. Look, you're stuck in some kind of reverse boomerang universe where you intend to sell your story, your product and your services, and then you end up buying their story and their presentation and their viewpoint. Oh, Grant, we can't afford it. You showed somebody something they don't need. They don't need to buy. They knew when they came in, they were on a budget. You show it to them. And what do they say? Oh my God. You know, we got problems at home. My mom's sick and I don't have any insurance and the economy's bad and we're going to wait until the economy gets better and my mom's healthy. And you buy it. Oh yeah. Okay. You should do that. You should do that. Oh yeah. And I need to pray about it too. And you buy the whole deal. You buy the whole package because you're gullible and untrained and you're a good person. But here's the reality. This person left their home knowing, just want to remind you, left their home and came to you knowing the mom was sick, knowing they had a budget problem, and knowing the economy sucked, and knowing that they're God-fearing people. And they still came to you. What does that tell you? That tells you they'll violate all their agreements. And that if they're truly God-fearing, they've already prayed to God this morning when they left their house and said, hey, we're going to go see Grant. And we're going to look at his product, even knowing the mom's sick, we're over budget, and the economy sucks. See, you bought the story. I didn't. The great salespeople, the great ones, stay sold on their proposition. Santa Claus is a perfect example of someone that stays sold on their product, their service, and their offering. Santa sells everybody. Number five, the great salespeople ask questions. Look, if you hate asking questions, you hate prying, you hate digging, and you feel like doing that is too personal or prying into someone's business or invading, look, you're not going to make it in the field of sales, and you definitely will not make it in the field of negotiating and closing. What is your income? I ask the customer. How much money do you guys make? You feel strange about asking that question? You need to learn how to get used to asking that question. How long have you worked at that company? Who is the decision maker in the household? Look, if it comes down to flipping a coin, who wins? Okay. And literally we flip the coin. Who's going to be the decision maker? And it lands on a side. Who picks? Who wins? Who gets their way? Why can't you guys do this today? Why can't you? Oh man, I already told you the payment's too high. Why can't you make a payment that's too high? Well, we never buy it the first place. Why can't you buy it the first place? Why can't you change your mind? Why can't you do it anyway? Why can't you do it even though your mom's sick? Why can't you do it even though the economy's bad? Why can't you? Why don't you do it anyway? Who makes these kind of decisions? When did you decide to use that plan? How much money do you have? When you say the economy's bad, what does that mean? See, if you can't ask those kind of questions and get uncomfortable and ask and pry and dig and find out, why do you say the price is too high? Compared to what? When you say the price is too high, what do you mean? If you love it, what does it matter? So what, the payments are too high? Don't make them all. See what I'm saying? I'm going to pry. I'm going to dig in, dude. Why? Because I'm sold on my product, my service. So what is too much money? People spend too much money every day. Ask questions. Number six, the greats. The greats don't just ask questions. They always get answers to questions. If you notice great salespeople, they know how to get you to tell them the answer to a question. I know a lot of salespeople, they don't mind doing number five, asking questions. The problem is they never take the time to actually get an answer. And even when people answer, they don't listen. So they don't even know what the guy said. I was with a man yesterday, asked me what I wanted before I could even answer. He's showing me something else. I'm like, dude, you just asked me a question. He asked me what I wanted. I'm about to tell you what I want. I'm about to tell you what I value. I'm about to tell you what I want to look at first, what I value the most, what I pay for. You didn't even listen. These people believe, the great ones, believe that they control conversations by asking questions and getting answers. See, an amateur salesperson believes they control the sale by asking questions, but it's not true. The great ones know that they control the sale by asking and getting answers and duplicating the data. They ask a question, then they ask another question. This is an amateur. And then they ask another question. Sometimes they don't even get any answers and they don't even know it. The person who controls the sale is not the person simply asking questions, but the person who gets answers to questions. How much money do you make? Man, a guy showing me a condo, an extremely expensive condo for the Ritz-Carlton in Miami. He doesn't know how much money I make. Why didn't he know? Why wouldn't he ask? Oh, he just assume I'm qualified. But why not ask? Is it going to offend me? What am I going to tell him? None of his business? Probably. I'm going to say, dude, none of your business. It gets really touchy when you start asking people how much money they make, because that's taboo-boo. Sir, I'm just wondering, you know, when you're looking at a condo that this is this expensive, you might be asking, dude, how much money does a guy like you make? How much money does somebody have to make to actually pay for this? See, there's a lot of ways you could ask that and get a question to and break that common ground, that uncomfortable, and start to really get in communication with somebody. Just make sure you give them time to breathe. And always, if you're going to step through the door, always get an answer to the question. Number seven, knows that price is never the issue. If you believe that the lowest price is the reason people buy things, then you should not consider sales. You should become a clerk at Walmart or McDonald's or a waiter in a restaurant. Cheaper alternatives can replace anything and everything, including Walmart's and the 99-cent store. If you're out looking for a job and you want a better wage, you better get yourself understanding that you're a salesperson now and you don't want to be the lowest cost provider. I don't care if it's a purse, a phone, a job, a TV, an automobile, insurance, mortgage. Someone can and someone will sell their product for less money. Even more of a reality is that most of the things that are bought and sold on this planet every day are not even necessary to have. Let's face it. I mean, what do I need every day? I need oxygen. I need a roof over my head. Not even mandatory. I don't have to have that. Everything else is kind of a plus point. Everything else is. From the shoes I wear to the socks to the underwear to the phone I have, everything else is pretty much a privilege. Anything can be bought cheaper. The great salespeople know that too high is a myth. Too high. I can't afford it. I can't do that. That's too much money. The great ones know that the price objection is not the reason people buy or don't buy something. If you believe the lowest price is the reason people buy things, you will never be great at sales. Number eight, the great ones are willing to pressure and persist. And in fact, the great ones that I have met believe the really great ones, the ones that can sell in down cycles and up cycles, believe that in fact, most of selling, most of it requires some level of pressure and persistence. Now, if you're one of those people who have become convinced as a child by your parents, sold by your parents, your teachers, and your environment, that getting your way is a bad thing and that you should avoid all sales jobs and any job, in fact, that involves negotiating, debating, or entrepreneurship, and that pressure is awful. I told you. How many times do you think you were told as a kid? How many times do I have to tell you? And you're sitting there, you're like 8 years old, and you're like, hey, Itch Bay, okay? I'm going to keep asking you. I'm going to keep grinding you. I'm going to keep pushing you because I know this. You're about to break, and you're only 8 years old. Then you become 28 years old, and you quit doing the very thing that got you what you wanted when you're eight. Look, pressure and persistence are necessary to get that extra sale. A diamond is only a piece of coal until the right amount of pressure applied for the right amount of time makes a diamond. People will not separate from their money or make decisions, even bigger deal, just to make a decision, without someone building value and then someone insisting on that person taking action. Somebody has to be sold. Somebody has to be convinced this is the right thing. Do it. Now's the time. Look, you have to learn how to use pressure professionally. You have to learn how to professionally persist so people feel good about it. If you despise pressure or persistence, don't do sales. Do not do sales. Stay away from it. Now, if you've committed to sales, then what you have to do is you have to learn how to love pressure and love persistence. And I promise you there can be a way for you to learn and love both. Number nine, the great salespeople believe selling is a good thing. Most salespeople actually believe that what they're doing is wrong and unethical. The average salespeople don't believe in what they're doing, believe it or not. And they actually believe that what they're doing is bad. It's a bad thing. I shouldn't be doing this. I feel bad about it. Dude, because you're not sold in your product. You're not sold in your service. You're not sold in your company. Even one small dose, one little tiny, piece of this type of thinking can kill your chance of making a sale. Great salespeople are proud of their title, proud of their profession, proud of their product, proud of their company. They'll defend it. They'll fight for it. They believe in it. They don't call themselves consultants. They have salesperson on their card, okay? They don't call themselves something else. They don't actually object to their own prices. They don't think they're overpaid. They're sold. They believe that what they're doing is a good thing of good value and a good exchange. Number 10, the really, really great ones, the really super great, they train and prepare themselves. They find time for books, programs like you're listening to right now, and they don't listen to them once or twice. They repeat them over and over. The great ones are the ones you're going to find on the front rows of seminars, bookcases with books, audio programs in their car. These people are not hit and miss. I'm not talking about some guy that got in the real estate market and he was good for 3 or 4 or 5 years, or he's good when it swings, and then when it comes down, he kind of loafs it out for 3 or 4 years, conserves his capital. I'm talking about the guys that are great on the way up, great on the way down. They're just always producing. Training and preparation is an ingredient of the great ones. If you're one of those people who thinks that you're going to be successful just because you hit it at the right time, just because you have natural abilities, but you're unwilling to train and prepare, I promise you, you're going to be punished. And I don't mean punished hurt. I mean punished compared to your potential. And there is no punishment greater than that. Your potential's up here and you're delivering at this level. I don't care if you're the top guy in your company, your region, or the country. If your potential's up here, you know the truth. You can be an average salesperson if you want to be. You can be an average delivery mechanism. You're going to die broke. And that should be some kind of motivation for you. Even great salespeople would be plagued with competitive threats, industry changes, challenged economies over a lifespan of their careers. And they will find themselves at some point, like we all are, at risk all the time. To be great at selling, you'll have to make a commitment to sales training, seminars, books, audio programs, downloads, virtual online universities like Cardone University, and staying connected to sales tips and strategies like our strategy every week that I send you for free, CardoneSuccess.com. By the way, numbers 1 and 8 will not only assure that you fail as a salesperson, I can't imagine that you'd be successful as a salesperson if you violate those, but also that your life on planet Earth will be very difficult. And number 1 and number 8, if you don't remember, willing to be told no and willing to pressure and persist, number 8. I hope you've enjoyed Sell or Be Sold. It's been my pleasure to read this book to you, to expand on it, to ad lib, to joke around, to kick around. I hope you find it inspirational. I hope most importantly that you take the time to listen to it again, because I promise you the second, third, and fourth time you listen to it, you'll hear completely different information than you heard the first time. And please share it with a friend, maybe somebody you know, more importantly, maybe a client, that you can help them make their business bigger and better and more expansive. Hey, at the end of the day, if they have more money, they can spend some of it with you. Be great. Have a great career in selling, and thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Sell or Be Sold audiobook. This was written and narrated by myself. Yes, I'm Grant Cardone, New York Times bestselling author and your friend in sales and in business and all things important. This book is copyrighted by me, Grant Cardone, in the year 2012.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.